Frank wished he had taken a moment to find out the man's name before that unfortunate passed away. As it was, all he could carve on the crude cross he and Salty made were the date and the letters R.I.P. They set up the cross at the head of the grave they dug to one side of the cabin after they'd filled it back in.
It's mighty late in the day to be pushing on, but I ain't sure I feel too good about spending the night here where that poor varmint crossed the divide.
I feel the same way. I'd rather make camp somewhere else.
Let's ride. We've done all we can here.
They headed east, following the creek as it meandered along the valley. Soon, the cabin and the lonely grave were out of sight behind them. That night, they made a cold camp.
Palmer's less than a day ahead of us. If he hasn't spotted us before, we don't want him to now.
We're going to catch the no-good varmint. I can feel it in my bones.
No disrespect to your bones, Salty, but there's still a lot that could happen.
Frank gazed off into the darkness.
But we now know that he's up there somewhere ahead of us. And that's something, anyway.
For the first time in several days, Joe Palmer wasn't hungry. He looted the trapper's cabin of all the supplies he could pack onto his horse after moving his saddle over to the horse in the corral behind the cabin. Now, with a week's worth of provisions and a spare mount, he felt better about his chances than at any time since fleeing Powder Keg Bay. As he leaned back against the fallen tree that lay in the clearing where he'd made camp, he wondered idly about his former partner. Palmer had been trying to get away from Yemo Hopkins ever since they bolted Skagway together with Soapy's loot. It wasn't that Palmer had anything against Yemo. He wasn't that bright, but he was strong and loyal. But Palmer wanted all the money for himself.
Why should I share with him? I've been doing the thinking for us both.
He never planned on partnering up permanently with Hopkins. That was just a way for both of them to get out of Skagway with their hides intact when the vigilantes started their rampage. But in the months since then, Hopkins watched him like a hawk. Hopkins didn't mind Palmer carrying the loot, but he didn't let him out of his sight either. Yemo was cunning, even if he wasn't exactly what anybody would call smart. So far as Palmer was concerned, running into that old pelican Salty Stevens was a stroke of luck. It was amazing Stevens still lived. He disappeared from Skagway with winter coming on, and Palmer just assumed the old bastard froze to death somewhere. The worrisome thing was that if Stevens was still alive, Frank Morgan might be too. Morgan befriended the old-timer in Skagway. The gunfighter was definitely dangerous. Palmer and the rest of Soapy's men found that out when they tried to get rid of him. When the shooting started in Red Mike's, Palmer seized the opportunity to get out of town while Hopkins was pinned down behind the bar. Palmer had mixed emotions about the outcome of that gunfight. If Stevens killed Hopkins, then he didn't have to worry about Yemo coming after him. If it was the other way around, chances were Hopkins would follow him. Hopkins knew the plan called for them to cross the mountains and head for Calgary. The big brute wouldn't be in a forgiving mood. He would want the money, and he would want revenge for Palmer running out on him like that. Maybe it hadn't been a good idea, Palmer mused now. He hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about it, though. He just acted when the chance presented itself.
As usual, I'm damned either way. And damned even more if Frank Morgan is still alive and coming after me.
But he couldn't do anything about that now, except try to stay ahead of any possible pursuers, no matter who they were. Since leaving Powder Keg Bay, he had been living on the game he could shoot. Now, with any luck, he could make the stolen supplies stretch all the way to Calgary.
I bet I can make it all the way.
Once he reached the settlement, the biggest in Western Canada, he was confident that he could link up with some fellas he knew there and be safe, even if Frank Morgan was still alive and on his trail. Palmer tensed as he noticed the reaction from the animals. They had heard or smelled something. A moment later, he smelled it too. Wood smoke. Somebody had a campfire burning not too far away.
Damn.
He hadn't built a fire because he didn't want anybody seeing it. Somebody was out there in this wilderness who didn't care about that. Stevens? Morgan? Both of them?
Nah.
The light breeze that carried the scent of smoke to him came out of the east. It was possible that someone trailing him could have gotten past him without him knowing about it, but he thought it was unlikely. He had been moving pretty fast. That meant somebody else was ahead of him. No telling who it might be. Another trapper, maybe. Some travelers on their way through the mountains.
It could be anybody. They don't have to be a threat. But what if they are? Damn.
He got to his feet and picked up his rifle. The idea of traipsing around on the side of a mountain in the darkness wasn't very appealing to him, but he liked the idea of being surprised by enemies even less. He was a city boy and didn't like this wilderness, but he had been around it enough that he was confident that he could find his way back to the camp. He left the horses tied up where they were and started making his way through the shadows, following the scent of wood smoke that still drifted through the night. Charlotte Marat stood with her arms crossed, glaring impatiently at her brother.
The fire is already too big, Joseph. Someone will see it.
Joseph tossed another branch onto the flames and shrugged.
Who is out here to see it, other than our friends?
We don't know who is out here. That is the whole point of being careful.
It was easier to humor Charlotte than to argue with her. Much easier. He knew that. Sometimes he had to remind himself of that fact, however.
We'll let the fire burn down. I wanted some hot food tonight. All this running and hiding and living like animals. It gets wearisome, Charlotte.
Her expression softened, and when it did, some of the beauty that hardship had drained out of her returned, if only momentarily.
Of course it does. I'm sorry, Joseph. But we must stay alive and free if our cause is to have any chance of succeeding.
She sat down on a slab of rock on the other side of the fire. The light from the flames painted her face with red shadows. Joseph Marat was aware that his sister was a beautiful woman. She should have been in an elegantly appointed drawing room somewhere, wearing a fine gown, instead of hunkered in a forest clearing in boots, denim trousers, and a flannel shirt. Her thick, dark brown hair should have been piled up on her head in an elaborate arrangement of curls, instead of drawn back and tied behind her head so that she could tuck it more easily under her hat when she was riding. But neither of them had asked for their fate. The Indian blood that mingled in their veins with the French meant that they would always be half-breeds, pitiful creatures to be scorned and looked down upon, despite the fact that both of them were more intelligent and better educated than the English and the Scots who had driven their people out of their homeland. Joseph took the skillet from the fire, divided the beans and bacon in it among the two of them. His rifle was close at hand, and even while he was heating the food, he paid close attention to the woods around them. What he told Charlotte was true, as far as it went. They had no enemies out here that he knew of. But it was what a man didn't know that often wound up killing him, Joseph reflected. Charlotte was absolutely right. He shouldn't have built such a big fire. The objection she raised didn't keep her from eating eagerly. They washed the food down with sips of hot coffee.
How much longer do you think we'll have to wait?
Joseph shook his head.
I don't know. Duryea wasn't sure when the guns would arrive. Sometime this month.
Oh, we've been waiting for a week already.
I know. We'll wait another week if we have to. However long it takes.
Joseph's tone was a little sharper than he intended. He saw the flash of hurt in his sister's eyes and wanted to apologize to her. He suppressed the impulse. A man who was tough enough to lead a revolution didn't start saying he was sorry every time his bossy little sister got her feelings hurt. A little noise in the brush caught Joseph's attention. A small animal might have caused it, but it might be something else, too. Moving casually, so as not to alarm anyone who was watching, he reached over and put his hand on his rifle. Charlotte noticed the movement, and her eyes narrowed. Joseph knew she was about to ask him if something was wrong. To forestall that, he stood up.
I think I'll take a little walk.
Why?
I don't demand explanations from you when you have personal business to conduct, do I?
Her face turned even redder in the firelight. He felt bad about embarrassing her, but better a little embarrassment than tipping off a possible enemy that he was aware of them lurking near the camp. He tucked the rifle under his arm, as if he didn't have a care in the world, then stepped out of the circle of light cast by the campfire. instead of heading toward the sound he heard, he moved off in another direction. As soon as the thick shadows underneath the trees enfolded him, he turned and shifted the rifle so that it was in his hands, ready to fire. He began working his way around the camp. When Joseph was a boy, his father had been friends with Gabriel Dumont, the famous hunter, plainsman, and Louis Riel's second-in-command. Dumont taught Joseph how to track game, and that involved being able to move silently through the woods, even in darkness. Joseph used those lessons now, taking care each time he put a foot down not to make any noise. It was slow, painstaking work, but such caution could save a man's life. He paused frequently to listen, but he couldn't hear anything except the faint crackling of the fire as it burned down. Had he been too suspicious? Was there really nothing dangerous out here?
Joseph? Joseph, are you all right?
Blast it, Joseph thought bitterly. He couldn't answer her without giving away his position. But if he failed to respond, and there really was someone out here watching the camp, that silence might warn the lurker that he had been discovered. The brush crackled again, right in front of him this time. He saw a patch of deeper darkness shift and reveal itself to be the rough shape of a man. Certain now that something was wrong, Joseph lunged forward and thrust the barrel of his rifle into the stranger's back.
Don't move! Charlotte, stay where you are!
Instead of obeying the order, as would any sane man who had a rifle barrel prodding him in the back, the stranger suddenly twisted around and threw himself out of the line of fire. Joseph started to pull the trigger anyway, but his finger froze on the trigger as he realized the rifle was pointed toward the camp. If he fired, he might hit Charlotte by accident. That second of indecision was enough. The man grabbed the rifle barrel and wrenched upward. That move made Joseph jerk the trigger involuntarily. The stranger drove the rifle toward Joseph, ripping the weapon from his hands and slamming it into his chest. While Joseph was off balance and struggling, the man barreled into him and knocked him off his feet. The next second, Joseph felt the cold, hard bite of steel as the stranger pressed a gun muzzle into the soft flesh of his neck.
Don't move, mister! I'll blow your head off!
He was about to die, Joseph thought, and things couldn't get any worse. But then they did.
No, monsieur. It is you who should not move, or I will blow your head off.
Joe Palmer had been threatened plenty of times in his life. He had a pretty good feeling for when somebody actually meant to kill him, and for when they didn't. The gal who had just called out might think she meant the threat, but she really didn't. When it came down to the nub, she wouldn't pull the trigger. He was betting his life on that. Palmer didn't take his gun away from the man who tried to jump him.
Lady, you better be careful. Even if you shoot me, you can't do it fast enough to stop me from killing your husband.
He's not my husband. He's my brother. And all I have to do is pull this trigger.
All that's holding back the hammer of this revolver in my hand is my thumb. You shoot me and the hammer falls. Your brother dies. Simple as that.
For a moment, a tense silence filled the darkness.
Do you want me to do?
Something inside Palmer eased. He wasn't going to die tonight. Not from being ventilated by this woman, anyway. His bet had paid off.
Look, I don't mean any harm to you folks. Your brother's the one who jumped me, stuck a rifle in my back. I'm just defending myself here. Why don't you come around where I can see you?
She didn't respond right away. After a moment, though, he heard her moving. She circled through the brush and stepped into his line of sight. In the shadows, under the trees, he couldn't make her out very well, but he saw that she had lowered the rifle.
Put the gun on the ground.
Charlotte! Don't do it!
The gun barrel pushing into his neck half-strangled Joseph.
Shoot him!
Better not! Damn it, I'm trying to be friendly here!
He wasn't actually interested in being friends with these two, although from what he'd seen of the woman as she sat by the fire while he eavesdropped on their conversation, he wouldn't mind getting better acquainted with her. However, they had mentioned they were waiting for somebody, and the word guns had been dropped casually. Palmer found that intriguing. He wanted to know more about what they were doing out here, hundreds of miles from anywhere.
Don't trust him! Shoot him, Charlotte!
I cannot!
You got no reason to. In fact, to prove that, I take back what I said. You hang on to that rifle, miss. That way, if I do anything to show that I've been lying to you, you can shoot me then.
I would be more inclined to believe you if you got off my brother.
Palmer looked down at the man he had pinned to the ground.
How about it, mister? If I let you up, you gonna behave?
I don't have much of a choice, do I?
There's always a choice, friend. Sometimes we make good ones, and sometimes we don't.
Palmer eased the revolver's hammer back down.
I'm gonna take a chance here, and hope I made a good one.
He pulled the gun away from the man's neck and stood up, stepping back so that he'd have plenty of room to move if he needed to. The man sat up and rubbed his neck where the gun barrel had dug in painfully. Palmer kept the revolver in his hand. If the bastard tried anything, Palmer knew he'd have time to shoot him, then plug the girl too if he had to. He hoped it wouldn't come to that. He'd much rather get friendly with Charlotte than shoot her. When he needed to, he could be pretty damn charming. He tried that now.
Look, folks. I just smelled your fire and thought maybe I could get a little coffee and maybe some hot food. Not to mention some company. This is mighty lonely country out here.
You were spying on us. I heard you moving in the brush. You were listening to what we said.
Then you lied to me when you told me there was nothing wrong.
Be quiet.
Sure, I was eavesdropping. I wanted to find out who you were and whether you'd be likely to shoot me if I walked into your camp. A man who's not careful about what he does out here deserves whatever happens to him.
You don't sound like a frontiersman.
Maybe I ain't one. Not by choice, anyway. I spent most of my life in cities, but I've knocked around out here in this big lonely enough to have learned a few things. My name's Joe Palmer. What's yours?
Telling somebody your name usually caused people to let their guard down a little, Palmer knew. He didn't mind telling these people who he really was. He wasn't wanted in Canada, and anyway, if he decided that they were a threat to him, he'd just kill them. Simple as that.
My name is Joseph Marat.
See? You're Joe and I'm Joe. Just a couple of Joes. That ought to tell you right there we should be pards.
Marat nodded his head toward the woman.
This is my sister, Charlotte.
Palmer lifted his free hand to the brim of his derby.
Mademoiselle, it's an honor to meet you.
Do you speak French?
Not really. I've picked up a little here and there.
Marat started to get up. Palmer stepped forward and extended his left hand.
Let me help you up there.
Marat hesitated, then clasped Palmer's hand. Palmer hauled him to his feet. Marat still seemed suspicious, but the tension in the air definitely had eased.
Let's go back to the fire. We have a little coffee left, but no hot food. I am sorry.
Don't be. I'm just obliged for the offer of coffee.
He turned his back on them and started toward their fire, which was visible through the trees. It was a risky move, he knew. But so far tonight, his bets had paid off, and he was going to continue to ride his luck. The Marats, brother and sister, followed him. They didn't shoot him in the back, so he figured that for now, he was ahead of the game.
Where is your horse?
They reached the clearing where the campfire was burning down to tiny flickering flames.
I've got a couple of them. A saddle horse and a pack animal. I left them tied up a ways off. When I smelled your smoke, I wanted to check it out, but I knew the horses would make too much racket. If I had seen that you folks were dangerous, I would have snuck back to my horses and gone around. You would have never known I was there.
I knew.
So I'm not much of a woodsman. No offense, but you two don't exactly look like Daniel Boone either.
It was true. All three of them were a little out of place here in this vast wilderness.
This is our home. We are Métis.
Half-breeds, you mean?
Mixed bloods. Our ancestry is mostly French with a little Indian.
Huh.
Palmer didn't care. A redskin was a redskin as far as he was concerned. These two might not look it, but they were tainted with savage blood. He had heard about the Métis. You couldn't spend much time in this part of the world without hearing about them. Descendants of the French fur trappers, the first white men to venture into Western Canada. The trappers took Indian women as wives as they spread all over the plains and mountains. When the British arrived to spread the dominion of the crown all the way from one side of the continent to the other, the Métis tried to get along peacefully with them at first. It didn't take long for the mixed bloods to realize, though, that as far as the British were concerned, they had no real voice in their fate. Led by the highly intelligent and charismatic Louis Riel, twice the Métis tried to rise up against the British. The Métis scored a minor victory or two, but then the British crushed their resistance. The first rebellion led to the formation of the Northwest Mounted Police. After the second rebellion, Louis Riel had been found guilty of treason against the crown and hanged. Riel had died less than 15 years ago, but to Palmer, it was ancient history and had nothing to do with him. Or, at least, it hadn't had anything to do with him until now. The earlier talk about guns sure made him curious.
Didn't mean any offense. I've heard about you folks. The way those damn Britishers treated you never seemed right to me.
He might as well make them think he was on their side. That was the quickest, easiest way to worm himself into their confidence and find out what was going on. Charlotte got a tin cup out of their gear and lifted a coffee pot from the edge of the fire. She poured the last of the coffee in the pot into the cup and handed it to Palmer.
Thank you.
Palmer knew he wasn't a particularly handsome man, but he was big and rugged-looking, and women seemed to respond to him when he smiled. Charlotte Marat was no different. She lowered her eyes and blushed.
What are you doing out here?
I could ask the same thing of you, you know.
Palmer sipped the coffee, which was bitter and had grounds in it. He didn't let his face show how bad it tasted.
Our business is our own.
Likewise. I don't mind telling you that I'm on my way to Calgary, though. I've heard that some friends of mine have gone into business around there. I thought maybe I'd join up with them.
That was actually true. The criminal grapevine that stretched across even vast areas of frontier wilderness had carried the rumors that Owen Lundy and Jericho Blake were operating in Calgary now. Palmer worked with Lundy and Blake in Chicago before they all moved farther west and north, and he figured they could probably use another good man. But they would be even more likely to let him throw in with them if he already had a lucrative scheme lined up. These two innocents might be the key to that.
If you're headed to Calgary, maybe we could travel together. On the frontier, it's always safer for a group.
Our destination is our...
Your own business, I know. Look, if you want, I'll go back to my horses and won't bother you folks anymore. I don't like sticking my nose where it isn't wanted.
Oh, it's not that, Monsieur Pamer. It's just that we are engaged on a matter of great importance. We must be careful about everything we do.
Her brother glared at her as if she had already said more than he wanted her to. Palmer took another sip of the bad coffee and nodded.
Hey, at least I got to see some more humans. This is lonely country, and a man gets tired looking at nothing but elk and moose.
Palmer drank the last of the coffee and managed not to grimace.
I'll be pushing on, I guess.
Good luck to you in Calgary.
And good luck to you and whatever you're doing.
Palmer handed the empty cup to Charlotte and smiled again.
So long.
He left the camp, making quite a bit of racket as he tramped through the woods. That was just for show, because he stopped when he was a couple of hundred yards away and listened intently.
Oh, I don't see why we have to move camp. He seemed a very nice man. He let you off and didn't hurt either of us?
He snuck up on us, Charlotte. People only do that if they're up to no good. That man can smile all he wants, but he's up to no good.
He heard them moving around and talking to each other, and a few moments later, the sound of horses' hooves drifted through the night air. The orange glow of the fire was gone now. They were moving their camp. Palmer wasn't the least bit surprised. He had expected Marat to insist on it. It didn't matter. They might be native to this land, but he had cunning to spare and never lost a trail when there was promise of a payoff at the end of it. He would find them again and track them until he discovered what was going on here. The delay would give any pursuers coming after him more of a chance to catch up, but it couldn't be helped. Whatever Marat and his sister were up to, Palmer intended to cut himself in on it. And when he had done that, well, maybe he would just take himself a share of pretty little Charlotte as well. Frank, Salty, and Meg took up the trail again the next morning, riding east through the mountains. The terrain was rough enough to make their progress frustratingly slow. That frustration increased when Salty's horse pulled up lame in the middle of the day. The horse began to limp.
Consort, dead blame, sorry excuse for a flea-bitten nag. Why, I oughta...
Take it easy.
Take it easy? We're gonna have to let this jughead rest a day or two. Wouldn't do no good to switch out the packs on one of the mules and slap a saddle on it. Those supplies weigh just about as much as I do. so it wouldn't help the horse to have to carry him.
He jerked his battered old hat off and slammed it down on the ground in exasperation.
That varmint Palmer's gonna get that much farther ahead of us.
We'll make up the time, and even if we don't, we know where he's headed. We'll just have to catch up to him in Calgary, that's all.
It's gonna be that much harder to find him once he gets to the settlement. Calgary's big enough he'll be able to find a place to hide.
Frank couldn't argue with that.
We'll find him, Salty. You've got my word on that.
They dismounted, unsaddled the horses, and took the packs off the mules. Meg took in their surroundings.
If we had to make camp sooner than we expected, this isn't a bad place to do it.
She was right about that. The ground was fairly level, and there was an open stretch along the bank of the creek with evergreens towering above it. The valley was narrow here, running between rocky, steep-sided slopes. Frank took a can of liniment from one of their packs and massaged the thick, foul-smelling stuff into the tight muscle on the bad leg of Salty's horse.
That'll help. In the meantime, we might as well take it easy.
Salty looked as if that was going to be a difficult task for him. He leaned against a large rock and pulled his hat down over his eyes. Frank grinned and shook his head at the old-timer's chagrin. He understood why Salty felt the way he did, but there was nothing that could be done about it.
I think I'll take a walk up the creek.
He pulled his Winchester from its sheath.
Might find some game. We could have elk steaks tonight.
We won't need a fire tonight, but I suppose I'll go ahead and start gathering some wood.
Keep your eyes open. You wouldn't want to run into a bear.
I'll keep that in mind.
With the repeater tucked under his arm, Frank walked along the stream. Between the twists and turns it took and the way the trees closed in, he was soon out of sight of the camp. In fact, as far as he could tell by looking, he might as well have been the only human being in 500 miles. Frank didn't mind the solitude. In fact, he liked it. These Canadian Rockies were some of the most spectacularly beautiful country he had ever seen. But they held plenty of danger as well. Beautiful or not, carelessness could get a man killed in a hurry here. As he walked along the creek between the trees, he saw birds and small animals, but no elk or moose. The crackle in the brush behind him made him spin around and bring the rifle to his shoulder, ready to fire.
Frank, wait! It's me!
He found himself staring over the Winchester sights into Meg's blue eyes, which were wide with surprise and even a little fear right now.
I'll be...
Frank lowered the rifle.
Blast it, Meg. You know better than to sneak up on me like that.
I didn't sneak up on you. I was just walking along behind you. I'm surprised you didn't hear me before now.
So was he. Surprised and angry. Mostly at himself. He had let himself get caught up in contemplating his lonely past. If Meg had been an enemy, he would probably be dead now.
I thought you were going to gather some firewood.
He dropped the rifle to his side.
I did. Then I decided to come after you.
Something wrong back at camp?
No, not unless you count Salty snoring.
She came a step closer to him.
I just thought you might want some company.
It would have been rude to tell her he didn't.
I was about to start back. Didn't see any game worth shooting.
Meg looked around.
It sure is lovely here. And the air smells wonderful.
It's because of all these evergreens. And because there's no town close by to foul the air.
He was trying not to think about the way her breasts lifted underneath the soft buckskin of her shirt when she inhaled deeply like that.
You don't care much for civilization, do you, Frank?
I like civilization just fine.
Then it's the people you don't like.
Yeah, I like people too, just not some of the things they do. Most folks are too greedy. And they're too quick to judge other folks.
Isn't that what you're doing right now?
I reckon you're right.
Anyway, you shouldn't hold people to your standard. Not everybody can be as perfect as Frank Morgan.
I'm a long way from perfect. That just goes to show that you don't know me as well as you think you do.
I know that most men would have had me in their bed 100 times in the months that I've known you, Frank. I've pretty much thrown myself at you.
He looked away, fastening his gaze on the stream that danced and bubbled merrily a few yards away.
We don't need to talk about that.
I think we do. Damn it, if you don't know by now that I love you, then you're a lot dumber than I think you are.
I'm smart enough to know that I'm twice your age.
But not smart enough to know that I don't care about that?
Listen, I've been married twice. I don't intend to ever get married again.
Who said anything about getting married? You see a preacher anywhere around here? I don't. But I see a nice, thick bed of grass on that creek bank, and I see mountains and blue sky and all the beauties of nature. I'm just saying we ought to add to those beauties, Frank, and if that shocks you, I'm sorry. I just don't believe there haven't been other women in your life besides the ones you married.
There have been.
More than he could remember, really. There was a time when he had taken comfort where he could find it, and then ridden on without regret, taking with him only memories. And those always faded.
Then why is it a problem?
Because, blasted, I'm too damn old for this.
I don't think so.
How had she gotten so close to him without him noticing? He couldn't answer that. But suddenly she was close enough that he could feel the warmth of her breath against his face. She lifted her arms and put them around his neck before he could pull away. Did he even want to pull away? He sure wasn't trying very hard to do so. He didn't put up a fight when she lifted her face to his and pressed her lips against his mouth, either. He had the Winchester in his right hand. His left arm came up and went around her waist. He wasn't thinking now. It was an instinctive reaction when he pulled her closer to him. She came eagerly, her body molding to his. In the cool mountain air that surrounded them, the heat of her kiss seemed searing to Frank. Then he heard something besides the thudding of his own heart. With the arm that was already around her waist, Frank picked up Meg and hustled her away from the creek, deeper into the shadows underneath the thickening trees.
Quiet, there's somebody out there.
Frank listened intently.
Who was it?
No idea. Sounded like several horses and men, though.
Do you think it was Palmer?
That was an interesting possibility. As far as they knew, Palmer had been alone when he fled from Powder Keg Bay. He could have run into some other outlaws and joined up with them, though.
I don't know, but I intend to find out. Come on, let's get you to camp. We need to tell Salty about this so he'll be on his guard, too.
With Frank setting the pace, they moved quickly but quietly through the trees, heading back to the spot where they had left Salty. Frank hoped that nothing had happened to the old-timer while they were gone. As they neared the camp, he heard snoring and knew that Salty was all right. A feeling of relief went through Frank. They emerged into the clearing and saw him slumped against the rock where he had been sitting earlier. Frank nudged Salty's foot with a booted toe. Salty's hand moved toward the butt of his gun.
Take it easy, it's just us.
Salty took his hat off and ran his fingers through the tangled thatch of white hair.
Damn, blasted! You come mighty near giving me a heart attack, Frank. You hadn't ought to engine up on a fella like that.
We heard men and horses moving around somewhere near here.
You get a look at them?
No, we just heard them.
Frank heard them. I didn't really hear anything myself, so they must not have been too close.
Salty climbed to his feet and put his hat back on.
Noises are funny things in these mountains. They can bounce around so they seem like they're right close. But there ain't really no telling where they're coming from.
I know. That's why we have to be careful. Hold off on building a fire. Keep the horses and the mules quiet, and be on your guard.
From the way you're talking, it sounds like you ain't gonna be here.
I'm not.
Where are you going?
To find those hombres and see who they are.
Chances are they're just some trappers or prospectors. Don't have anything to do with us.
But you have to find out for sure, don't you?
It's the best way to stay alive.
I could come with you.
I'd rather have both of you here, keeping an eye on the animals and our supplies. If anything happens to them, we'd be in mighty bad trouble.
She looked as if she wanted to argue some more, but then she nodded.
I'll do whatever you think is best, Frank.
Are you going on foot?
Quieter that way.
He gave Meg a quick smile, then set off on foot along the creek. Again, it wasn't long before the camp was out of sight behind him. A few minutes later, Frank heard voices. The sounds came from his right, toward the creek. Carefully, he worked his way in that direction again, but found a giant slab of rock blocking his path. It must have sheared off from the face of the mountain looming above him and toppled down here sometime in ages past. The rock sloped away from him and was rough enough that he thought he could climb it without much trouble. Being careful not to let the Winchester strike the rock, the clink of metal on stone could be heard from quite a distance. He began the ascent. Frank didn't get in any hurry. In a situation such as this, haste was dangerous. He still heard the men talking and smelled the quirlies they were smoking. They must have stopped to rest their mounts and let the horses drink from the creek. He reached the flat top of the big rock. It was high enough that the trees didn't shade it much, so the stone was hot from the sun as he carefully crawled out onto it. Before he got there, he stopped and took his hat off, left it lying on the rock with his rifle. Then he inched forward again until he could peer over the edge of the rock without being too noticeable. From where he was, Frank could see through the trees to the stream. The trunks and branches blocked his view to a certain extent, so he couldn't be sure how many men had stopped there on the creek bank. At least half a dozen, he decided, as he watched them moving around. There were that many horses, of course, and some pack animals, too. Frank's forehead creased in a frown as he spotted several mules with wooden crates lashed to them. He wondered what they were carrying in there. Two more mules were carrying wagon wheels, of all things, but the men didn't have a wagon with them. From what Frank could see of them, the men were roughly dressed, and he spotted several rifles and holstered pistols. Well-armed hard cases and a caravan of pack mules usually meant one thing: smugglers. Frank had no idea what sort of contraband these men were transporting, but it was none of his business. He knew they probably wouldn't take kindly to being discovered. It would be better just to let them go on their way. He and Meg and Salty would try to avoid them. Satisfied that he had found out what he needed to know, Frank edged back until he could no longer see the men. He picked up his hat and rifle and returned to the ground. Even though he was moving away from the apparent smugglers, he was still careful not to make too much noise as he walked through the woods. Frank stopped short. Every muscle in his body tensed as his hands tightened around the Winchester. He figured he was about halfway back to the spot where he had left Salty and Meg, and that was about where the gun blast had come from. He broke into a run. He didn't worry about being quiet now. That shot sounded as if it came from Salty's old Remington. There had been only one shot, so it was possible Salty had blasted a snake or some other varmint. But it was also possible Salty wasn't able to shoot anymore. That put a worry in Frank. There was also a chance those hard cases heard the shot and would come to investigate. Frank wanted to get his two companions moving, assuming they were all right, so the smugglers wouldn't discover them. A horseman's high-heeled boots weren't made for running, of course. That slowed Frank down a little. But he made pretty good time anyway, and within minutes began to spot some landmarks that told him he was getting close to the camp. He stopped to listen again. Rushing blindly into a situation was just plain foolish. Nothing. No horses, no men, no birds or animals. The single shot had been enough to spook the critters. Frank began working his way closer to the campsite, using all the cover he could find. Several minutes later, he crouched in the brush and carefully parted the branches so he could look between them. From where he was, he could see part of the grassy clearing on the creek bank. He didn't spot Salty or Meg and didn't hear them talking. A horse blowing told Frank the camp wasn't completely deserted. Frank sniffed the air. The tang of burned powder still hung there faintly. This was where the shot went off, all right. He was sure of it. He shifted his position, circling the camp in as close to absolute silence as he could manage. When he stopped and peered through another gap in the thick foliage, he could see all the camp that he hadn't been able to see before. The lame horse stood there, but the other saddle mounts and the pack mules were gone. More importantly, so were Salty and Meg. A short time earlier, Anton Mirabeau had had nothing more on his mind than the lovely Charlotte Marat. She filled his thoughts, as she often did. He should have been paying more attention to where he and the other men were going. If he had, they wouldn't have ridden right into trouble. As it was, Mirabeau and the half-dozen other Métis with him emerged from the trees into a clearing on the creek bank, only to find themselves looking down the barrels of a rifle and a revolver, held by a couple of people who had taken cover behind some pines.
Hold it right there, mister.
From the sound of it, Mirabeau thought the voice belonged to an old man. But an elderly finger could pull the trigger of a gun the same as a young one, provided, of course, that age had not stiffened it. Mirabeau reined his horse to a stop and motioned for the other men to do likewise. His gaze darted around the campsite. He saw three horses and three saddles, along with a couple of pack mules and the packs of supplies lying on the ground. Three saddle horses meant three people, but he saw only two pointing guns at him and his companions. The third man was probably somewhere nearby, out of sight, likely with a rifle pointing at him right now.
Easy, my friend.
Mirabeau took care to keep both of his hands in sight.
We are not hunting trouble.
And what do you want?
We are looking for some friends of ours. A man and a woman. Brother and sister, actually. Perhaps you have seen them? They both have dark hair. The young woman is very attractive.
I don't know who in blazes you're talking about.
Mirabeau caught a glimpse of white hair and beard as the man peered around the trunk of the tree where he'd taken cover.
Who'd have figured these woods would turn out to be so blamed crowded?
Mirabeau knew what he meant. This area of the mountains had been chosen for the rendezvous precisely because it was so remote, so isolated, so empty of humanity. He looked at a nearby tree, the one where the man with the rifle crouched.
Well, perhaps the rifleman is not a man at all.
He took note of how the denim-clad hippie could see behind the tree curved. Though he had lived his entire life in Canada, he credited the blood of his French ancestors for giving him an appreciative eye for the female form. The blue eyes and the blonde curls stuffed under a flat-crowned hat just confirmed his suspicion. He and his companions were faced with an old man and a girl, but even such as them could be dangerous.
We will be on our way. Please forgive the intrusion.
Hold on just a dang minute. Who are you fellas? And what are you doing out here in the middle of nowhere?
We could ask you the same, but we did not.
Are you looking for that varmint Palmer? See a friend of yours?
I do not know anyone named Palmer.
Yeah, well, you'd probably lie about it if you did. That'd make you the same sort of thieving polecat he is.
This man Palmer is a thief?
Dang right he is.
And he is an American?
What else would he be?
The response brought a faint smile to Mirabeau's lips. So typical of the Americans to think without hesitation that they were the only ones occupying the continent. But despite their arrogance, they had their uses, such as providing the weapons that Mirabeau, the Marats, and the rest of the Métis so desperately needed if their plans were to succeed. It was possible this man Palmer was part of the group that was supposed to rendezvous with Joseph and Charlotte. If that was true, then these two were after him. Could the old-timer be an American lawman? Mirabeau couldn't rule out that possibility. That meant he and his friends couldn't just ride away. They had to find out the truth. Nothing could be allowed to disrupt the plan. Not now. Not when they were so close to achieving their objective. Even though Mirabeau's thoughts were whirling madly in his brain, he didn't allow that to show on his face. Instead, he kept smiling.
I give you my word. We know nothing about the man you seek. We are innocent trappers, nothing more.
The old man hesitated, but finally he nodded and stepped out from behind the tree. He didn't lower the big revolver in his hand, which, despite his age, was rock steady. He motioned with his free hand for his companion to stay where she was.
All right. I reckon you can go on about your business. Don't get any ideas, though. There's a dozen of us in this here posse, and they'll be back any time now.
The old man had overplayed his hand, Mirabeau thought. There might be one more man in the group, but the story about there being a dozen was an obvious lie. Mirabeau hitched his horse into motion and lifted a hand as if in farewell as he started past the old man. The other Métis fell in behind him. Without warning, Mirabeau kicked his feet out of the stirrups and launched himself from the saddle in a dive that sent him crashing into the old man. His arm flashed out and struck the old-timer's arm. Both of them went down, with Mirabeau's considerable bulk pinning the old man to the ground.
No!
The young blonde woman darted out from behind her tree with the rifle in her hands. She hesitated, obviously not willing to take a shot at Mirabeau for fear that she would hit the old man instead.
Take her!
She swung the Winchester toward the others, but she was too late. a couple of them were already on her, diving from their horses to grab her and wrench the rifle out of her hands. She tried to scream, but the sound lasted only a second before one of the men clapped a hand over her mouth. Mirabeau hit the old man, pulling his punch so that he stunned him, but did no real damage.
Get their horses and supplies. We'll take them with us.
He hadn't forgotten about that third horse. He halfway expected rifle fire to start raking them, but silence hung over the rugged landscape. In a matter of moments, his companions had gathered up the supplies and thrown saddles and packs on the animals. They left the lame mount and put the girl on one of their own horses in front of a Métis plainsman. Mirabeau lifted the half-conscious old man and draped him across his horse in front of the saddle.
Across the creek!
He led the way, and with the others following, the group of Métis and their prisoners splashed across the stream and disappeared into the thick woods on the far side. Frank emerged cautiously from the brush. He knew that Megan Salty couldn't have been gone long. He was convinced the shot he'd heard had come from Salty's revolver. His eyes scanned the ground, searching for any clues as to what had happened here. He looked for splashes of blood on the ground, but thankfully didn't see any. Something on the other side of the creek caught his attention. The grass was thick on the other bank, as it was on this one, and there was a wide stretch where it was wet. Frank saw droplets of water glistening in the sunlight as it played across the bank. The grass would be wet like that if a number of horses had forded the creek here and emerged on the other side, he thought. That was further proof that the incident had taken place very recently. The water splashed onto the bank by the horses hadn't had time to dry. Frank looked at the horse Salty had been riding. The lame animal just stared back at him, uncomprehending.
I wish you could talk, old fella. I wish he weren't lame, too.
Frank couldn't use the horse to go after Salty and Meg. The animal couldn't carry his weight, not without being ruined permanently. Frank patted the horse on the shoulder.
I'll be back for you if I can.
Then he waded out into the creek, feeling the tug of the current as the knee-deep water swirled around his legs. When he reached the other side, Frank spotted a few hoof prints in the mud at the very edge of the stream. He couldn't tell from them how many horses crossed over here, but he estimated half a dozen or more. Those were formidable odds, especially for a man who had no supplies and no extra ammunition except for the rounds and the loops on his shell belt and another handful of bullets stuffed in a pants pocket. Frank didn't hesitate, though. He picked up the trail, using bent and broken branches in the undergrowth to tell him which way the riders had gone.
Too bad Wolf's not here.
The big cur's keen senses would have led him right to his quarry. Palmer could have doubled back, Frank supposed, and met up with some allies. That thought crossed his mind earlier while he was looking for the men he and Meg heard. Those men turned out to be the smugglers he spied on. They didn't have anything to do with kidnapping Salty and Meg. That meant there were two groups of strangers out here in this wilderness. Three, if you counted him and his two companions.
Plus Joe Palmer. Damned if these Canadian Rockies aren't getting as crowded as some of the cities back east.
The brush was so thick that one man on foot could move just about as fast, or faster, than several men on horseback. Frank was counting on that. But at the same time, he had to be careful not to rush. He didn't want to go charging right up the backsides of these kidnappers without any warning. That might get him shot, and more importantly, it might get Salty and Meg shot. From time to time, he stopped to listen. And the third or fourth time he did that, he heard noises ahead of him.
I'll bet that's the group I'm looking for.
He picked up his pace. He wanted to get ahead of them if he could. Outnumbered like he was, an ambush was his best chance to free the prisoners. Hit the men before they knew what was going on. The slope grew steeper as he circled to get ahead of the riders. That was good. It would slow down the horses more than him. He paused again to listen. Heard them off to his right, maybe 50 yards away. Like a ghost, he started through the woods again. The ground leveled off into a shoulder about 100 yards deep. An almost sheer cliff rose on the far side of the open ground. The riders would have to go around it to one side or the other. From where he was, Frank couldn't see a trail leading on up the mountainside, but there probably was one somewhere around here. A game trail, if nothing else. There were several boulders clustered at the base of the cliff, but if he holed up in those to challenge the kidnappers, he would be in effect pinning himself down. They could turn and flee, and he couldn't do anything to stop them. He abandoned the idea of getting in front of them and dropped behind a large deadfall at the edge of the slope instead. The fallen tree would make good cover, and he could see the whole stretch of open ground from here. He waited. But not for long. Only a few minutes had passed when the riders reached the top of the slope and emerged from the trees. Frank's mouth tightened in anger as he spotted Salty and Meg. The old-timer was riding double with the man in the lead, who was a big hombre with a black beard. The man wore buckskins and a wide-brimmed slouch hat. Salty was in front of him on the horse, draped over the animal's back like a sack of grain. That had to be a mighty uncomfortable position for the old-timer. One of the other men had Meg in front of him on his horse. She was sitting up, but the man had an arm held tightly around her. She had lost her hat, and Frank could see that her face was pale with anger and strain. She seemed to be unharmed, though. That was a relief. The men were dressed like trappers or hunters, but Frank didn't see any of the gear they would have had with them if they were after furs. They were leading the horses and the pack mules they had brought from the camp along with Salty and Meg, and they had another pack horse loaded down with what looked like a couple of small chests. He waited until all seven of the riders had emerged from the trees and started across the open ground toward the cliff. Then he laid the Winchester's barrel across the thick log behind which he lay.
Hold it right there! The next man who moves, I'll blow him out of the saddle!
The big bearded man in the lead wheeled his horse toward Frank. He hauled Salty up in front of him to use as a human shield. For a split second, Frank still had a shot past the old-timer, but he didn't take it. The odds of hitting Salty were too high.
Hold your fire!
Frank didn't know if the man was talking to him or to the other riders. Either way, no more shots rang out.
Frank! Get out of here while you can!
I'm not going anywhere! Not without you and Salty!
Take it easy, mon ami!
The bearded man's accent and the French words gave away the fact that he was a French-Canadian. Frank didn't know much about Canada's politics, but he knew that some of the country's population was descended from the French trappers who first explored its interior. This man's high cheekbones and the faintly coppery shade of his skin indicated he might have some Indian blood as well. His companions appeared to share that ancestry.
Who are you?
That's my business!
Palmer wasn't part of this group, and they didn't appear to be the sort of men that Palmer would throw in with. That realization increased Frank's puzzlement, but this wasn't the time to ponder the matter. Salty and Meg were prisoners, and that was the only important thing.
We have business here as well, and we cannot afford for anyone to interfere with it.
My friends and I have no interest in you. Set them on the ground, leave our animals and supplies, and ride on. We'll forget all about this.
I regret to say we cannot. Throw down your gun and come out, or I will snap this old man's neck.
The coldness of the man's voice told Frank that he probably meant the threat. Frank wasn't used to letting himself be bluffed, though, and there was a chance of that. Of course, it was Salty's life he was betting.
If you do that, you'll have a bullet through your brain before the old-timer hits the ground.
Shoot him anyway, Frank. Shoot me. A Winchester round will go right through me and get him. It appears to be your play, Frank.
Frank didn't like what he had to do next.
Yeah, that's right.
Then he shot the bearded man's horse. The horse went down, its front legs collapsing so abruptly that Salty and the bearded man were thrown forward over its head. The collision with the ground broke loose the man's grip on Salty. The old-timer reacted with surprising swiftness for his age, rolling away from his captor. Frank saw the other men reaching for their guns. He sent another shot whistling over their heads. At the same time, Meg acted, driving an elbow backward into the belly of the man holding her. His grip slipped, and Meg dived off the horse. No sooner had she hit the ground than Salty was there beside her, reaching down to grab her arm and haul her to her feet.
Kill him!
That order put things on a different footing where Frank was concerned. Before, he had been willing to give the men a little benefit of the doubt. He worked the Winchester's lever and fired again at the man he had just set afoot. The bearded man flung himself to the ground, making Frank's shot miss by a hair. Frank swung the Winchester and fired again. This time, his target was the man who had been leading their horses and pack mules. The man let go of the reins as he clutched a bullet-busted shoulder. Meg and Salty ran for the trees. One of the men swung his rifle toward them. Frank drilled the man through the body, knocking him out of the saddle. A second later, Meg and Salty reached the shelter of the pine. The other men concentrated their fire on the deadfall behind which Frank crouched.
Son of a...
When he risked a look again, he saw that one of the other men had spurred over to the bearded hombre. He reached down, grasped the bearded man's wrist, and hauled him up.
Let's get out of here!
The men who were still mounted wheeled their horses and galloped toward the cliff, turning still more to race along parallel to the rocky face. They must have known where a trail was, because moments later, they vanished into the trees that grew almost to the base of the cliff. Frank kept his rifle trained on their vanishing point as he listened to the hoofbeats fade. It sounded like they were really lighting a shuck out of here, but he suspected a trick.
Frank!
Stay where you are! Don't come out until we're sure they're not doubling back! Are the two of you all right?
We're not hurt. How about you?
I'm fine.
He waited another 15 minutes, just to be sure, before he stood up behind the deadfall.
All right, I'm pretty sure they're gone now.
The two of them emerged from their hiding places in the pines. Salty went to gather up the horses and mules, while Meg hurried over to join Frank as he went to check on the man he had shot off one of the horses. The man was dead, his eyes staring lifelessly at the sky. Frank had never seen him before.
I'm sorry. They were on top of us before we knew what was happening. We tried to convince them to go about their business, but they jumped us.
What is their business?
Frank reloaded the cartridges he had burned in the Winchester.
Did they say?
No. They seemed to have some idea that Salty might be a lawman, though. That's what it sounded like from the talk I overheard.
I used to be, you know.
The old-timer came up, leading the horses and the mules.
Range detective, anyway. And unofficial deputy a time or two.
If they were worried about star packers, that means they were likely up to no good.
I reckon you could bet a hat on that.
Do you think they have anything to do with Palmer?
I don't see how they could. But there are things going on out here that we obviously don't know anything about.
Dang, mountains is downright crowded.
Same thought occurred to me. And it's worse than you think. Because I found those men you and I heard earlier, Meg.
It couldn't have been the same bunch. They came from opposite directions along the creek.
That's right. The men I saw appeared to be some sort of smugglers.
Frank thought about the chests he had seen strapped to the pack animals of the bearded man's gang.
I don't suppose this bunch said anything about what they were carrying.
Not a word. What in the world is going on here, Frank?
I don't know, but I reckon it'd be a good idea for us to find out.
I figured we'd stay on Palmer's trail and keep heading for Calgary.
Problem is that we don't know whether or not Palmer has run into those smugglers, and he could have even joined up with them.
So we gotta find them so-called smugglers, dodge that other bunch of killers, and look for Palmer all at the same time?
That's about the size of it.
You don't never do nothing simple, do you, Frank?
Well, sooner or later it usually comes down to killing. Can't get much more simple than that.
Anton Mirabeau seethed with anger. He and his companions had climbed to a rocky promontory where they could look back down the mountainside. One of his men had a pair of field glasses in his saddlebags. Mirabeau took them and scanned the rugged landscape that fell away in front of him, searching for any sign of the two men and the blonde girl. He didn't see them. Scowling in disgust, he handed the glasses back to the other man.
What do we do now, Anton? We shot a horse. We'll go back and get Pierre's horse. From the way he fell, he won't be needing it anymore.
I don't like losing a man.
You think I do? Pierre was like a brother to me. You all are. We are a band of brothers, are we not?
A couple of the men shrugged. The others just regarded him sullenly. They had started out on this journey with such high hopes, and now one of their number was dead.
The plan will proceed.
Mirabeau couldn't allow their resolve to weaken.
Pierre will not be there to see us triumph. But triumph we will. Come, we'll fetch his horse.
Mirabeau rode double with one of the other men this time, as they headed back toward the meadow where the fight had taken place. He was confident that the man called Frank and the other two would be long gone by now. That turned out to be true. The three of them were gone, but they had taken Pierre's horse with them. Pierre still lay lifeless on the ground. Mirabeau ground his teeth together for a moment before he got control of his surging emotions.
We will bury him. Then we push on. We will take turns riding double. Our horses are strong. They will be all right.
This was a setback, though. There was no doubt about that. At least they still had the money for the guns. Soon, Joseph and Charlotte would make contact with the Americans and arrange the transaction. Soon, the Métis would have what they needed to win their freedom. That was the most important thing. But once that goal was accomplished, Mirabeau intended to turn his attention elsewhere. He would find out who Frank was. More importantly, he would find out where Frank was. And once he did, Mirabeau would settle the score. The man called Frank would die.